All right, good evening, everyone, and welcome to our study session. I'm going to turn it over to President David Malkin.
Good evening. It's October 22nd, 2020, and I call the study session of the Rolling Unified School District Board of Education to order. It is now 4:30. Dr. Mitchell, will you please do the roll call?
Yes, Donna Friedman.
Here.
Mary Chen.
Yeah.
Lynn Ebenkamp.
Unmute, please.
Yeah, you have to unmute, Lynn.
Here.
Thank you very much. Angelina Pride.
Present.
David Malkin.
Present.
All board members are present.
Can I have a motion to adopt the agenda of the board study session of Thursday, October 22nd, 2020?
I'll make a motion. Second.
Okay, who was the first on that?
Ms. Friedman.
Okay, and the second was Ms. Pride.
Me.
Okay, any discussion? Okay, we'll then do roll call. Ms. Friedman?
Aye.
Mr. Chen?
Aye.
Ms. Ebenkamp?
Yes.
Ms. Angelina? Ms. Pride?
All the same. Aye.
And Mr. David, it's aye. So the motion carries unanimously. Tonight, I have the honor of asking Ms. Friedman to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance on this historic night before the presidential election.
Okay, please stand. Put your right hand over your heart. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Ms. Friedman. And I hope everybody will exercise their right to vote between now and November 3rd. Dr. Mitchell, are there any public comments this afternoon?
Yes, I do believe that we have one.
Okay, before we start with that one, let me just read this brief note. The public is welcome to provide comment to the board. Remarks are limited to 3 minutes. Unless extended or limited by the vote of the board. A maximum of 20 minutes, unless extended by the board, is allocated for each subject discussed. The Brown Act open meeting regulations under which the board must operate do not allow board members to comment on non-agenda items or information you may bring up that are not on the agenda. Additionally, no action can be taken. However, the board may give direction to staff following a comment. Ms. Ward, can you please introduce the first speaker?
Yes, we only have one speaker tonight. It's Mr. Roy Humphreys.
Okay, can you hear me? Hello.
Yes.
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, this is Roy Humphreys, and thank you for all the good things you do. First, we all owe a debt of infinite gratitude to my wife, Cindy, who has endured my RUSD quest for over 3.5 years. She notes, as Mr. Chen can inform you, Fubuchi Laida Leo Ado. It is a good day for Roland Unified, getting its second day in a row of Tribune articles on Trustee Area 2's candidates to include a fourth candidate, Mr. Silva, who would not be able to engage the process but for the write-in candidate ballot measure that Roy Humphreys spearheaded. Oops, that's me. Last meeting, Mr. Malcolm noted that he does not respond to me anymore, to which I understand coming from a person who has nothing to offer the conversation after the Gang of Five and administration denied the voting rights to tens of thousands in the 2018 election cycle. They additionally make a mockery of the deaths of Martin Luther King and the two Jewish New York college kids who were killed in Mississippi registering blacks to vote. We can only be too grateful that a new day of reckoning is upon us and that God willing, in 2022 election cycle, we will have an additional house cleaning. That is, unless the triad will do the right thing and resign now. Last but not least, Harry Peterson says hello. And if it's a choice of publishing his departing memo or the gilded certificate of appreciation, he prefers the publishing of his departing memo. A grand jury may be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Humphreys, for your comments. We'll now go to reports, item number 3 on the agenda. First, we have a staff report on RUSD 2020-2021 student achievement, continuity of learning and mitigating learning loss by the educational services team. I will now turn the meeting over to Dr. Mitchell at this time.
Perfect, thank you very much. As we get the presentation set, and I believe that Dr. Huff will be given opportunities to share slides. Is that correct, Dr. Zamora?
Yes.
Perfect, okay. So as we get ready to start, this is the presentation that we have each fall, sharing information regarding student achievement. And this year we're adding that continuity of learning piece and mitigating learning loss. In the absence of state test scores and state assessment data that is typically taken in the spring, which did not occur because of COVID-19, we are bringing additional information to the board so they can see the work that we've been doing as a district. And at this time, it's my pleasure to turn it over to Dr. Zamora.
Thank you, Dr. Mitchell. Tonight, we will share with the board the outcomes of our most current data on student achievement, our continuity of learning efforts, and how we are mitigating learning loss. Some of the outcomes we will share show student achievement before dismissal. Other outcomes will show students' strengths and areas of need in the most recent assessments that we administered. Our continuity of learning efforts include professional development, academic support, such as tutoring, providing additional instructional materials, such as independent learning, reading and learning resources, social emotional supports that we are providing, and the support that our Family Resource Center is providing to our students and families. So with that, I would like to turn it over to Dr. Huff.
Hi, good evening. We'd like to start with the same slide that we shared at the spring presentation. And we thought it was important just to come back to this because the same constraints that were part of teaching and learning in the spring continue to be challenges for teachers and staff at the sites as they continue to connect and care for our students and provide learning. We just wanted to recognize all the teachers and the staff that are meeting these challenges head on and are along with all the new state requirements and are providing an exceptionally rigorous education despite all of these challenges in our new reality around virtual learning. This year, we are continuing to follow the state priorities in terms of how we're monitoring outcomes. We know it's important that continuing to monitor outcomes continues to be a priority of the board and is important to us to also continue to reflect on what's working and what isn't working. And so this year, you can see in these next two slides how we will be aligning our metrics to the California state priorities. And so the first one around conditions of learning, you will recognize these state priorities as state priorities that are reflected in the dashboard. And so even though the dashboard will not be presented this year, we still have metrics that we'll be watching this year that align to those same priorities. So under conditions of learning, looking at resources for students and families, tracking the number of devices and Wi-Fi hotspots that go out to support virtual learning, we will use the same state rubric for the implementation of academic standards around academic state standard priority, looking at attendance of parent advisory meetings and our parent survey outcomes for parental involvement. And then also looking at monitoring academic outcomes, which we'll talk a little bit more about in subsequent slides, but looking at student achievement this year, a new assessment around loss of learning diagnostics that we'll look at, continuing with our interim assessments, grades and graduation status, and then our state summative tests of LPAC and Smarter Balanced tests We just began administering the LPAC initial remotely, and all indications are that we will continue to administer the Smarter Balanced summative in ELA, math, and science at the end of the year. Whether that will be remote or in person or a blend is yet to be determined, but every indication is that we will be continuing to administer those summative state assessments. Around student engagement, the data that we were looking at has changed a little bit. We continue to track chronic absenteeism data. And then with the new Senate Bill 98, which requires districts to track student engagement, we are also tracking on a weekly basis students that were not engaged 60% or more for any given week. So for every Friday, we post a report to sites with list of students that were not engaged for 3 or more days of that week. And sites will use that list along with other data to follow up and engage them in the Roland 3-tiered re-engagement plan to help students stay engaged in learning online. For school climate, we will continue to administer the Healthy Kids Survey and our student and staff surveys. And then for professional learning, we just had our first professional learning district-wide day and administer a survey following that's immediately provided to sites to give feedback from teachers on how to continue to improve that support we give to them in their instruction. At this point, some of the data that we have as of October around student engagement is chronic absenteeism. And so what you see here is the past 3 years that we have of chronic absenteeism data. So the 16-17 school year when Roland had an 8% chronic absenteeism rate. And chronic absenteeism rate, as you know, is defined as students who are absent for 10% or more of the days in which they are enrolled. And so if we look over the last 3 years, you can see Roland really kind of staying at that 8% chronic absenteeism rate. In the 18-19 school year, it increased a little bit to 8.8%. Compared to the state, we've been lower than the state over those time periods. And then as of the first week of October, that chronic absenteeism rate right now during the virtual classroom is 8.1%. So sort of tracking with what the data has been showing over the past several years. And that number will change as we go throughout the year because the number of days that our students are enrolled changes every day. So we update this number every Friday. And in fact, last Friday, the number dropped down to 7.9. So it's staying right around that 8-point mark that we've seen over the last few years. In terms of monitoring academic outcomes and student achievement, wanted to go to a graphic that is included in the framework for English language arts. We've used this graphic a lot because I think it's a good visual that kind of describes the reality that there are really a lot of different assessments that teachers use to get feedback on learning. And really the most important assessment that a teacher gives that gives the most useful data for teachers is that formative assessment that happens on a minute-to-minute basis, embedded in instruction, when the teacher is listening and trying to understand maybe some words, some misconceptions, and then it helps that teacher immediately be able to change the course of their lesson and maybe do a little bit of reteaching, or would give them indication that there's been, you know, some mastery and they can move on sooner than they thought. And so over the last few years, we've spent a lot of time around formative assessment, and in a lot of ways, the teachers continue to engage in that. Some of the similar strategies that they use in the brick and mortar classroom, kind of that one-on-one conferencing when they're listening to the student read, understanding where there may be some misconceptions, having the students present, listening to small group discussions. Those things are still happening in the virtual classroom. But there are some new ways that teachers are using to do that formative assessment. This summer, we rolled out some training around formative assessment in the virtual classroom, which was a request by teachers in the spring. And so we provided some training around some specific ways that they could use technology, really kind of leverage technology to get that formative data back as throughout the week and throughout the lesson using technology. So things like embedding questions into a video that they make with Nearpod, embedding reflection questions into their lesson using Padlet. I heard one site in one of their updates a couple of weeks ago share with the board their use of Padlet. That's been a popular tool for teachers to use, and it's a great formative assessment tool. Using Flipgrid, having students kind of share their thinking. And so anyway, it goes on, but I just want to recognize, as we talk about these test data, these outcomes, that, you know, these are the interim assessments and the summative tests are ways for us to kind of get a pulse check. But really, we know and we understand that the most important assessment that teachers are doing is a day-to-day, minute-by-minute embedded into their instruction. The second, and then on the far right, as I mentioned, if we look at the large scale summative assessments, these of course are good for state, you know, accountability and dashboards. Like I said, we plan to give the Smarter Balance at the end of the year, probably remotely in some way or fashion, and LPAC. But the interim benchmarks are these district assessments, common assessments that we give twice a year, that, as I mentioned, are really that pulse check and help us kind of get a sense, kind of a higher level view of programmatically where we are in terms of mastery towards standards. So around interims, I just wanted to go back a couple of years, and the board's seen this data, but I just wanted to ground us in this data again, because we are living in a new reality of virtual classroom. But I wanna go back to our interim assessments in English language arts 2 years ago, and just show how we had 2 years ago, we had a 1% year-over-year growth in our fall interim, and we had a 2% growth in our winter interim, and this is in English language arts. And based on that growth, our for the first time, our ELA dashboard moved into the green. So you may remember that. If then we then go into last year, and we can see that our fall interim jumped 3 points year over year, and our winter interim stayed flat at 40% above standard. What we know is that these interim assessments that we give are correlated to outcomes on the Smarter Balance. But if you remember, with the school dismissal, we didn't give the Smarter Balance. So we don't have, unfortunately, this data shows that we would have stayed on track, at least, you know, with the green, with our year-over-year growth in ELA. So that's the background on ELA. And if we look at math, we see a similar pattern. 2 years ago, we had a 1% year-over-year growth, and we stayed flat in the winter math interim. And based on that data, we were in the yellow for math. But if you remember last year, when we looked at our math results last year in interims, we had tremendous growth. We had a 6-point growth in the fall, and we had a 3-point year-over-year growth in the winter. And so we really were excited about the summative for math, because we knew that we were on track to see a lot of growth. And so just as we had seen the ELA growth move into green and ELA 2 years ago, we were anticipating similar growth in math based on our year-over-year interim results. So I share this data to show that we do have a good sense of a longitudinal data of where our students have been performing on these interim assessments that are aligned to the Common Core standards and to the summative. And so as we move into this semester, into the fall interim and then the winter interim next February, we will have a good set of data to compare that to, just to get a sense of where we are as a result of the virtual classroom and the our new reality around distance learning. So the first set of data that that just came in a couple of weeks ago is our STAR reading assessment. And we've been giving this assessment for 7 years. And the purpose of the STAR reading in grades 2 through 6, we give it 3 times a year, is to help sites progress monitor. It gives teachers, helps them identify areas of focus. And it gives schools at the school level, students who may need additional support, academic support. It is a complement to other qualitative data. So if we look at STAR reading, that's really it's a adaptive test that's give online. And it really complements this qualitative data that teachers are collecting through running records, where they're able to really listen to the student read and get a more qualitative sense of where their reading level is. Overall, if you look this year, just as of 2 weeks ago, 42.6% of our students met the state benchmark, compared to a year ago this month, 42%. So similar to chronic absenteeism, this data is showing that we're, there isn't much difference year over year in the outcome on this assessment. If we look at STAR Math, which is given in grades 1 through 6, similar outcomes, slightly higher than last year, but not significantly different. Again, the STAR Math has the same purpose and some of the same limitations in terms that teachers aren't able to hear the students think aloud. But this quantitative data for STAR reading and STAR Math has been a good touch point for us to kind of get a sense of how far off are we given our virtual classroom from prior years. And this data is showing that there isn't much discrepancy this year compared to we were last year in STAR reading and STAR math. So the state, you may remember that the state is requiring every district this year to give a loss of learning assessment. And so in the learning plan that you approved last month, one of the assessments that we identified for this state requirement is the loss of learning assessment in Illuminate for grades 3 through 9. And I thought it was important to really highlight and explain some of the purpose of this assessment, because it really is kind of a one-off assessment. We've never given this test before. It assesses the prior year's content. So if I'm a fifth grader, then this loss of learning assessment assesses me on fourth grade content. And the idea from the state is they wanted every district to begin the year by asking the question, what might students be, be needing because of the school dismissal from March through June? It was tremendous upheaval. It was a very different learning context. Everyone was scrambling to shift over. And so what kind of impact on last year's learning did that have on students? So we've never given a test to students in September to what they learned the prior year. And so that's a little bit of a constraint, I think, a limitation on this assessment. We've also never given an assessment virtually. And if you talk to teachers about the assessment, I know that they've really struggled giving the assessment in a remote context. And we've just kind of starting to get a handle on that through LPAC Initial and some protocols. But this has been really challenging for teachers, and really making sure that teachers or students are there, that they're engaged, and what level of support are they getting from outside sources. And and it's also, we've never assessed students 3 months after they learned that content. So there are some limitations to this assessment. It is something that the state has asked us to do. We work with teachers to roll this out, and sites are looking at this data. But I wanted to just highlight some of the high level areas around in elementary and secondary around what were some of the strengths, and then what were some of the areas for growth that showed up in this assessment that was just given that sites have access to now. So if we look at elementary, and some of the areas of growth are around operations, all the way up through through third through sixth grade. And so if you look, you know, adding, subtracting within 20, multiplication, division, and then all the way up to sixth grade and performing operations. So that really, you can tell that through line in our elementary schools is very strong and students are performing very well. And ELA around language conventions and vocabulary showed up as a strength across all grade levels in this assessment. If we're looking at areas for growth, measurement and data, the domain of measurement and data showed up, and that makes sense. It makes sense to us because that's usually a domain, a standard that's a set that's addressed at the end of the year. So typically when a teacher would be addressing measurement data, we were in school dismissal. And so it doesn't surprise me that that's showing up as an area for growth. And then if we look at fifth and sixth grade around fractions, which that has been a domain that we have recognized in previous data as an area of focus for our upper grade students in elementary. And I know Dr. Rodriguez has already been organizing additional PD around fraction instruction that she can address later. And then for ELA, for upper grade elementary, reading information text showed up in quite a few grades. And again, that's not a surprise to us. That is a focus for our interim assessments. It is a claim that, as you recall from the last 5 years of Smarter Balanced, continues to improve in our district. But and so year over year, we've seen growth. But it is a claim area that is our lowest claim area. And so that sort of validates that data as well and is an area that we know that continues to be an area of focus. As we move into secondary and we look at the secondary areas of strength, so looking at dependent relationships between variables, looking at expressions and equations and functions, in seventh through ninth grade as areas that have been areas of strength. And then in ELA, a little bit more variance. So looking at vocabulary in seventh and ninth and language conventions showed up in a couple of grades as well as areas of strength on this assessment. And then if we look at areas of growth in secondary, looking at problem solving. So problem solving seventh and eighth grade, using ratios to solve problems, solving real life problems with expressions and equations, and then expressions and equations showing up again in ninth grade with analyzing and solving linear equations. And then a common focus and area for growth for that secondary is around writing. And the way that this was assessed around writing was, looking at sample writings from students and asking students to identify the most appropriate thesis statement or looking at the most appropriate main idea. And so they're given options of what might be the best sentence to add to an existing writing. So that's what that writing portion looked like on that assessment for secondary. So based on this data, so this is data again that teachers have now, they have it at the class level, site admin have it at the grade level and the school level. So based on that data, they have access to that data and there's a whole host of actions that that as a district we are supporting and Dr. Rivas and Dr. Rodriguez are now gonna walk us through what are we doing now? So that's the data, and that's sort of those are the areas of focus we've identified in our current data. And now Dr. Rivas and Dr. Rodriguez are going to walk us through five areas of actions that we're taking to address learning loss and to mitigate that learning loss, and not only mitigate but to really continue with the outstanding education that students get in this district, regardless of whatever mode of learning that is. So that will be around the topics of professional learning, academic support, addressing the whole child, how we're re-engaging students if they're not engaged in learning online. And then finally looking at additional online platforms that we've streamlined and added in response to the spring dismissal. So at this point, I'm going to turn over to Dr. Rivas, who's going to walk us through the next section.
Thank you and good evening. A focus on professional development has been to continue supporting and moving forward ongoing goals while providing strategic support for the current context. At both levels, the instructional coaches support teachers with instruction in the virtual classroom, and the support takes on various forms, including one-to-one coaching, weekly workshops, and communities of practice. At the elementary level, all TK to 6 teachers have licenses to RAS Kids Plus for leveled reading and English language development. All K to 2 teachers receive training in the units of study, phonics, to support foundational skills. Fourth and fifth grade teachers from the math-focused schools participated in 3 90-minute sessions to mitigate learning loss around fractions. And TK to 6 teachers had the opportunity to learn how to use virtual manipulatives to support CGI math using Braining Camp. Every teacher will have this resource to support math instruction in their classrooms. Twig Science for TK to 5 was offered to all teachers throughout the summer and into the fall to support science instruction in the virtual classroom. For sixth grade teachers, Green Ninja Science training was provided to support instruction as well in the virtual classroom. And kindergarten teachers are working with Christy Mraz, an expert in early foundational skills, to develop parent workshops on phonemic awareness, phonics, and early reading literacy skills. At the secondary level, PD opportunities have included workshops for math and science teachers to make virtual learning more hands-on. We partnered with LACO STEM Unit to bring PD for both middle and high school teachers. In addition, support for content-based PD includes conference attendance. Teachers have the opportunity to join content-alike teachers across the state to learn. And we have approved teachers for the California Science Education Conference, the California Mathematics Council South Conference, in the California STEAM Symposium. We also continue to provide support and training on implementing and maximizing new instructional resources, including our new textbook adoptions and new platforms like Gizmos for Science. Brian, the next slide, please. Now, virtual tutoring is another component of our academic support. And this month, our tutoring program was launched district-wide. The emphasis for elementary school has been on closing gaps in language arts and math. Teachers work with students in small groups and instruction targets assessed gaps. Students work on Ingenuity and Success Maker with specifically targeted content and receive instruction from teachers in those areas. At the intermediate level, teachers are working with students one-to-one and in small groups. Impact teachers work on Wednesdays during the instructional day on content and skills identified as areas of need by the site. In addition, there is tutoring after school for all students. And at the high school level, virtual tutoring is organized with college tutors. We have about 16 college tutors currently working with our students. College tutors are assigned to work in specific classrooms during the day, including ELD, Algebra 1, and classes across the core content areas to provide that one-to-one support for students who need it in the class on the spot and in the moment of the learning. Tutors also work after school to provide individual one-to-one support, and the schedule opens up tutoring from 3:30 to 7 o'clock at night. At Santana, we have one-to-one tutoring and support from the impact teachers during the day, as well as tutors assigned to math classes. Santana students can also participate in the after-school tutoring with the college tutors. In this slide, you can see here that some of our college tutors, we're very lucky to have some alumni from Roland and Nogales, as well as other recent grads tutoring for us. So we have tutors attending UC Merced, Azusa Pacific, UCLA, UC Irvine, and San Diego State. Now, as far as another way to mitigate that learning loss of learning, our virtual classroom schedule was developed to provide opportunities for intervention during the day, recognizing early on that we would have learning gaps. The structure of the instructional block provides teachers with daily and ongoing opportunities to address loss of learning, allowing for personalized instruction and monitoring of students. Teachers can create flexible rosters to design learning opportunities from diagnostic and formative assessments to target individual and small groups of students. with special attention to English learners, special education, fostering homeless youth, and students not making progress. Next slide, Brian. And I will pass this off to Dr. Zamora.
Thank you, Dr. Rivas. As far as mitigating and assessing learning loss for our special education students, at the beginning of the school year, additional procedures and practices were initiated to ensure that our students receive a free and appropriate public education via their IEPs. One of these procedures is the development of an emergency circumstances consideration plan that outlines and addresses how special education services will be provided to students who have an IEP when emergencies such as COVID-19 exist. The ECC, which is the Emergency Circumstances Consideration Plan, it highlights the alternative means by which the IEP will be provided under emergency conditions. We also trained our teachers and service providers to develop a distance learning plan to outline and communicate the supports students are being provided during distance learning. These supports may include, but are not limited to, small group lessons, one-on-one services, or office hours with the service provider, accommodations provided through various digital tools, and individualized learning tools. Both the ECC and the DLP were developed and designed to mitigate learning loss. In assessing learning loss, additionally, we are continuing the practice that has been in place in the past before COVID-19, which allows us to assess if a student has regressed in their learning within the first 8 weeks of the school year. If a student has regressed, their IEP goals are reviewed and updated, and the student is considered for an extended school year, considered for an extended school year. At the first progress report in November, the IEP teams will determine whether or not students with disabilities have regressed in every skill that their IEP goals address, and their IEP goals will be updated as needed. Thank you, Dr. Rivas.
And as far as supporting our English learners, we know when we focus on assisting our students in acquiring language and moving up proficiency levels while learning the content. Primary support for our English learners is embedded in the classroom through teacher modeling and guiding students while providing direct instruction and linguistic features. Differentiated instruction and collaborative work are key practices that support English learners in the classroom. And to provide that language-rich instruction and academic support in the classroom, we continue to provide learning experiences for teachers through relevant professional development. We have designed flexible PD to meet the needs, schedule, and goals of teachers by providing multiple avenues, formats, and content. We've offered after-school PD around specific topics, including newcomer strategies, integration of technology, and subject-specific application. We've also offered online bite-sized PD with 10-minute videos that showcase specific strategies and topics like engaging students in the virtual classroom and creating a choice board. This gives teachers access to on-demand and practical learning opportunities. We've also offered coffee group collaboration, where teachers have an opportunity to sign up for one-on-one meetings and coaching with our ELD program specialists. They can also add topics of interest for future PD. It's important to note that PD has also and can be tailored to sites. Principals and teachers can request targeted professional development support for ELD. And finally, teachers and staff have access to a host of resources, from field trip opportunities to presentations and tutorials, as well as websites and technology platforms to support their classroom needs. So far, we have offered approximately 22 professional development sessions for teachers, instructional aides, parents, principals, and tutors. Now the next slide, there we go. As far as continuing to support students in bridging the learning gaps, we have made a commitment to supporting reading at home with the allocation of resources to provide every student in grades TK through 6 with 20 book titles from a variety of genres recommended by Teachers College and connected to the units of study in reading and writing. Students also have access to the RAS Kids leveled readers. For secondary, the goal is to provide every student in grades 7 through 12 with 10 book titles from a variety of genres to support reading at home that is connected to core subject areas and disciplines, including science and social studies, at various levels and points of interest. Book bundles and titles are set up by grade level. And I will pass this now off to Dr. Rodriguez.
Good afternoon, everyone. I will be sharing the supporting the whole child. So one way to mitigate loss of learning is by supporting the whole child. The Family Resource Center has provided ample support to the families in our RUSD community. Miriam Kim, along with her team, has ensured that all students know how to access virtual backgrounds on their laptops. Many students have not felt comfortable allowing visual representation of their home. Therefore, the virtual backgrounds allow for privacy. In addition, FRC provided ready-to-go academic kits based on learning levels available for immediate use in the home. This has been a great support for our families. Instructional materials such as trade books designed as mandatory reading for high school students have been purchased and available to students. The FRC team attends staff meetings and provides training to teachers and administrators around McKinney support to students. These sessions are scheduled throughout the year to provide information to site staff members on how to identify and support homeless students in our schools. Additionally, any college-bound homeless foster Title I student is provided in-depth and one-to-one support sessions to assist with applications, financial aid, and any other type of support they may seek or need. The community liaisons are also equipped to help students connect to a variety of resources, including but not limited to mental health, clothing, hygiene needs, and translation support. The FRC has focused this school year on parent workshops. They offer Wellness Wednesdays, where parents can learn and listen to information around food and nutrition, staying healthy, and how to seek support around health and wellness. Another parent workshop offered by the FRC is Tech Bites Wednesdays. These parent workshops are facilitated by our very own Brandy Miller. Parents can go on and get tech help from our district expert. Finally, Go-Go Parents is an opportunity where grandparents are offered support at a slower pace, from anything instructional to navigating through technology. This is a big demographic group in our community that are raising and living with our RUSD students. The first session will take place next week. Next slide, please. The work around the Positive Behavior Interventions and Support, or PBIS, is delivered by our six best coach team. These teachers on special assignments deliver instructions and support for 57 students and their teachers with additional support on the monitoring list. Our BEST team provides weekly resources to teachers and administrators. The BEST team has created a website where an abundant amount of resources for teachers and parents are readily available. The BEST team also offers 1-to-2 monthly training regarding behavior and social emotional learning support to teachers and administrators. They have also provided parent training in this area. The last teacher training on positive classroom behavior support was very successful. 37 teachers attended an after-school session from 2:45 to 4:30. Teacher feedback was very positive, so much so that the BEST team will offer a repeat of the session in a few weeks. The school psychologist, along with our mental health specialist, counselors, and BEST coaches, are members of the threat assessment team. They focus on providing information to teachers, administrators, and parents around suicide prevention, social emotional learning programs, and trauma-informed training and practices and suicide prevention strategies. They also provide online resources and training to teachers, administrators, and our parents. Next slide, please. Ensuring students and family engagement. This is the re-engagement plan discussed in the LCAP plan to ensure students and family engagement is supported. the current chronic absentee rate is between 7% and 8%. This is actually less than our chronic absentee rate during our brick and mortar time. Schools have developed an internal process to follow a tiered re-engagement plan. Student assessment provides attendance data weekly to ensure that schools have the most current information at all times. Our next slide, please. For the Tier 3 re-engagement plan, schools have established a plan to send home and continue to send attendance letters weekly for the students in these tiers. Schools are holding virtual Zoom SART meetings, and the district is holding Zoom SARB meetings on Tuesdays and have been doing so since the first week of September. This is a way to keep on top of the attendance tracking. Finally, based on feedback from students, parents, and teachers from the spring, we streamlined some common online tools for the virtual classroom. All TK through second grade classes use Seesaw as their learning management system now. In grades 3rd through 12, use Google Classroom. And classes use Zoom for live interaction. Clever is our single sign-on tool that helps students log onto all platforms with one click. We also rolled out Parent Square as a common communication tool for all families. Next, you can see the tools that are now available district-wide for all students and teachers based on teacher request: Nearpod, Padlet, Screencastify, RazKids, and Ingenuity. And the last set of online tools listed that we are currently piloting with a smaller group of teachers to determine whether or not to add more licenses next year. We take a measured approach to adding online platforms, starting with a small group of teachers, and determine if it's a good fit for our USD students. So that concludes our section of our presentation today. At this point, we would like to open it up for any questions you may have so that we can answer any of the questions you may have.
Thank you, Dr. Rodriguez.
Looking for some hands. Ms. Pride.
Thank you for the information. Just a couple of quick questions. I'm familiar with a lot of the programs that you talked about, like Ingenuity, but Success Maker, was that the name of one that you mentioned?
I didn't mention Success Maker, but that was something that we did use during summer school. That is one of the programs that we continue to use during tutoring, I believe. That is something that has come out of Sylvia Rivas's office. And so we do use that for intervention and tutoring, I believe.
So is it similar to like Ingenuity or one of those other types of platforms? Is it?
Yes,
it is. I guess I'm just trying to find out what type of program it is because yes. I've never heard of it.
Right. So that supports students for learning loss. So it's kind of like an intervention program is what it is. And so it supports, it identifies any of the needs that our students are lacking. And so we can really target the needs of our students and pinpoint the needs so that our intervention groups are very personalized and direct.
Oh, okay. Thank you. My other question is, and these were from the whole first half of the presentation, when we talk about the absenteeism rate, does that include tardies? Or are we looking at tardies right now?
I do not have the answer to that. Dr. Zamora?
Dr. Huff, is Dr. Huff still on?
Yes, so tardies are not included in that rate. We only include chronic absenteeism as students that are counted absent for that day.
Okay, thank you. And then my final question is in regards to our foster and homeless students. I know that topic was touched on briefly, but I'd just like to know a little bit more about what types of support we're and how we're reaching out to them and making sure we're keeping track of them and keeping them on, you know, on the correct path to staying in class.
Yes, so this is something that's coming out of FRC. And so I know that Miriam has done a lot of work around making sure that she provides training and keeps our administrators and teachers up to date with the most current information about our students that are becoming homeless. Sometimes it's weekly that the number changes. And so I know that Miriam has done a lot of work around that, where we keep tabs on who our students are. Who are the students that are becoming homeless? How are we addressing their needs in every aspect, socially, emotionally, making sure that they have access to education and they're continuing to attend class. And so I know that Miriam has done a lot of that work.
Mrs. Okay. Price, we can provide, I can provide more information on a Friday memo via.
Yeah, nothing like too extensive. I'm just really worried that those numbers, we're going to see those numbers increase as well, because, you know, right now there's a moratorium on the evictions and with the economy and, you know, no rent relief for a lot of these families. I'm just concerned of, you know, making sure that we can keep track of our students and keep them in school. So if you could just give us just a blurb, nothing to, you okay. know, no dissertation.
Okay, we'll do.
Thank you. That's all my questions, Mr. Malkin.
Okay. Anybody else?
I have a couple Mr. questions, David.
I get to you next time, Ms. Evancamp, Mr. Chen.
Yeah, I have a question on the page 7 and page 9, and both pages are for the page 7 is for the ELA, and the other pages for the math, and the two page numbers are quite different. Are they in different grade level for different ELA and the math? Are the same group of kids? Or no, it's not the same group of kids.
Here, Mr. Chen, which slide page are you looking at?
Page 7. Page 7 is ELA, and page 9 is for math. And for example, the 2017 to 18 for ELA is 5,325 kids, and for math they have 6,600. So are they different group of kids, huh?
No, it's the same group of kids. So it's grades three through eight and grade 11.
Right. Then how come the number is so different?
So it was a participation rate for that year. So this was a little bit lower that first year in 2017, 2018.
Yeah, but the same year, they both are 17, 18. The 17, 18, and for ELA, there are the 5,325 kids. And for math, there's a lot more for when you on in the winter interim. The 6,600 is about 1,300 kids difference.
Yeah, so they're different assessments. So there's a fewer number of kids that took the ELA assessment than took the math assessment.
Why the number so different? The same group of kids, but not everyone take the.
For math, they take the SBEC interims in high school, so grades 9 through 11 as well, whereas in ELA, they only take it up to grade 8. So there are some, so the 6,607 number, mm-hmm. there are some students that are in grades 9 through 11 that are included in that, mm-hmm. and in grades in the 5,325 number, it's mm-hmm. only grades 3 through 8.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And mm-hmm. I can provide a follow-up explanation if you want more details on that, but mm-hmm. for grades 9 through 11, we use Illuminate assessments for mm-hmm. For the winter interims, not the Smarter Balanced. Okay. This is only showing the Smarter Balanced interims.
I see. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Then the other question is the percent of the engagement. So when you say engagement, what is criteria? Is engagement counting of the absent if the kids come into the class for just for 1 hour, then disappear. Sometimes they shut off the screen, and sometimes they disappear. Do you count the they're there, or how do you count the percentage of engage? What is the criteria?
That's
absent, and you got zero, or you got the how do you do it?
That's a really great question. So what we tried to do was model the chronic absenteeism this year, similar to the way that we take attendance and calculate absenteeism in prior years. So mm-hmm. if you think about at a school site in brick and mortar in prior years, if a student shows up to class, they go to class, the teacher will mark them present. Mm-hmm. And so in the virtual classroom, in the same way, if a student logs into the class and they are there with the rest of their classmates, and they are marked present. If the student does not show up at all for the class that day, then they are marked not engaged or absent. And so I think your question is around if they're in the virtual classroom, but maybe they're not engaging, maybe they're not talking, maybe they've got their screen turned off. In terms of marking for absenteeism, they are counted present in the same way that a student that would be, you know, sitting in their seat in the classroom, regardless of how interactive they are in that classroom, they are still marked present.
Yeah.
Now, you know, their grade may be affected by not being engaged and not answering questions and, you know, engaging with the content and learning. And so that's where that impact on their grade will happen and mm-hmm. their assignments. But in terms of just looking at slide 5, the absenteeism rate, if they are showing up to the class, logging in, then they are marked present.
Yeah, my question is very, very hard to get an accurate number in the virtual mode because the kids may come and attend it and log in and for 10 minutes and they may disappear then. It's hard for the teacher. And how teacher count the engagement? They just count the number every day or by hand or is that electronic number you can count it or how do they do it?
Just for these purposes, it is mm-hmm. if they're logged in and they're there, they're present in the class, then they are counted present. Mm-hmm. Now again, you know, their assignments, you know, and how they perform on their and their grades will be determined on how they interact with the content and to what degree they complete the assignments and on task and all of that. But in terms of just looking at this marking, you know, the codes for absences and attendance, then it's determined by whether they show up for the class or not.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Ebbenkamp, did you have a question?
Yes, I do. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Okay. I don't understand specifically what kind of criteria you're using to determine the strengths versus the needs for growth. Are they numbers or, you know, what are you using for your criteria to put students into those areas?
So that's a great question. So the categories that I have listed there are when we looked at every grade level and listed by assessment target. What you see listed there are assessment targets. So this assessment target that was at the very bottom is listed as growth, and the assessment target that they did the best on as a group, as a grade level, is listed as a strength. So it's relative to each other. So the strengths are, they did better on the strengths than they did on than the targets that are listed as areas for growth.
So they may not be strong in that area, but they're stronger than they were. Is that?
Yeah, exactly. And so I think it's like, what's the purpose of the assessment was really to give teachers immediate real-time data right now to say, where do I focus? Like, where do I focus my efforts in the classroom on shoring up some areas that may from the spring that you know, what are the biggest gaps from last spring from the prior grade level? And so when you look at, you know, they could reteach the entire year, but I think the purpose of this assessment was to identify of all of the key concepts, what are the areas that are really showing up as the biggest need? And that's where the areas of strength are. Those were the lowest performing group concepts on each of those assessments.
Okay. And then how are we utilizing our, our psychologists and our counselors since we've gone remote?
I can add to the counselor piece. Our counselors continue to conference with students and reach out to them. They also support our teachers when students are not showing up to class. The counselors become a resource for connecting with the families, reaching out, making sure that we're folding them back into the school setting and engaging them. So they're a critical piece in that re-engagement in connecting with families. And then obviously they're continuing to do a lot of the same work that they're doing in the past in terms of planning for students in the next steps and making sure that as grades are rolling out, that they're having conversations with students about that work and things that they can do to continue to support the students in their learning. As far as psychologists, I can't speak to that, but Maddie, Dr. Zamora?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Rivas. So as far as psychologists, we can have Dr. Timkep is gonna be part of the second presentation and we can have him tell us a little bit about psychologists in that presentation. I wanna make sure I do justice to the work that our great psychologists do. Can we do that? Or we can ask him to join us now. Is he able to join us, Dr. Mitchell?
I believe so. Gina, can you unmute Dr. Timkep and see if he can share with Mrs. Ebenkamp the work that our school psychologists have been doing since we've been on remote virtual classroom learning?
While you're getting it, maybe you could find out how are students referred by the teachers if they feel that a particular student's having a problem? Is that generally how it's done, or it's by parent request?
Dr. Timkep, you can go ahead.
Hi, good evening, board. Yes, we're following a lot of the same procedures that we did in brick and mortar. So if a teacher is seeing that there are signs or things happening with the student that might require counseling or touching base with that student, then they're engaging the psychologist to follow through with that. Many psychologists are also providing counseling services through student IEPs also supporting any and all behavioral difficulties or crisis situations that might come up with students. So they are tuned in to the teachers at sites just as they are in brick and mortar. So they look for referrals and then they follow up and make sure they're handling that situation with that particular student.
Thank you. I would think in the area of special ed, it's such a hands-on, one-on-one area. I would think remote learning would be very difficult for these kids to make progress.
It has been a challenge, but we've got very hardworking teachers that are getting creative and doing fantastic work with our students with disabilities. But yes, it's certainly been a challenge.
Thank you.
I just want to add on to that, there's this recent article that was out a couple of days ago that since March, the number of suicide has increased significantly, mainly due to the epidemic and the loss of jobs, the economy, et cetera, et cetera. And that our students might not be suicidal but the family that they're living with, their parents or extended family or whatever, could be having significant financial problems or living situations that are very negative that could eventually affect the student. And I would hope that the FRC would be tuned into that to help those families out when that does occur, either with a referral or some other type of assistance.
Yeah, and I think FRC as well as the psychologists have a good pulse on that. And that really comes from them consistently being present with the teachers at a site and keeping those relationships strong, because you really want to look for those signs during some of your Zoom meetings of anxiety and or depression. You can see those, observe those, and then we follow up.
And Dr. Huff, you mentioned that these assessments are being given virtually. Have they been tested for validity or reliability for being administered virtually? Or are we just using them that way without having any evidence that they're being that they're reliable and valid?
It's a great question. I mean, the items were developed by Inspect Item Bank, which is a company we contract with through Illuminate, and we have for about 10 years. And so the items themselves do go through a vetting process and a testing process. But your question about, I think it's a question we're all asking, is like, so what's the most valid way to administer this remotely? And the state assessment, LPAC assessment, just rolled out protocols that we're implementing now in the LPAC initial, in terms of like standardized protocols for administering the test remotely. But on a large scale, I would say no. I mean, the none of these tests have been given in a large scale remotely like this. So that that context is something that we're looking at and thinking about. But the items themselves did, but just the mode of remote instruction hasn't been done before.
Is there also assessments that Dr. Huff shared that are able to just give us guidance? Because there's also around how they're being administered, or is there any coaching happening with our students learning from home, et cetera? But it still gives our teachers a picture of students' abilities, and they're able to then use them as a form of formative assessment as they're planning and guiding their lessons and providing the support for students with the continuity of learning.
I just want to add that a couple of days ago, when I was visiting one of the virtual classrooms, I had the same question that Mr. Chen had when I looked at the number of students that didn't have their image, but it just had their nameplate. And it seems like as the students got older, you saw more and more of that. In the elementary school, all the kids were on screen. And I was asking Dr. Mitchell, you know, how do we know there's a student behind that nameplate? And she made a wonderful suggestion, that is that the teacher can call on anybody they want that's in that classroom. So if they're having a discussion or they're doing something, if a teacher doesn't see their actual face, but they just see the nameplate, they can say, okay, Johnny, what do you think about this? And find out whether they're there or not and whether they're paying attention. So I thought it was a pretty neat way of finding out, you know, who's behind that nameplate. Okay, any other questions or suggestions? Nothing, Donna? Okay, Mr. Chen, one more?
Yeah, I have one more question. Going to the virtual tutoring, it's nice to have the college students can volunteer to teach the kids, but is there do we need to qualify them or evaluate them? Because kids are still kids, and do we have any thing to qualify them before they put them in the job?
They are interviewed before being hired. It's part of the process. And they do go through training. So we did have coaches train the students on how to interact with students and what the expectations were, so the parameters can be developed. They're also monitored by a credentialed teacher. So the tutors are not alone with students, even in the virtual setting. So students will log in, the teachers will create the breakout rooms, assign tutors to the breakout rooms and disperse students into those. And then the credentialed teacher will pop in and out of those rooms, supervising and kind of facilitating that work. So there is that supervision, but also some training and support in terms of what the teachers expect of the tutors during those sessions.
That's good, thank you.
Ms. Fiedman?
Unmute. Okay, I changed my mind. I just wanted to say that I have reports for all these classes that I visited. I know we don't have time for them, but in 10 minutes, it's amazing what you can see what these teachers are doing with these students. These lessons are so good. If I was teaching right now, I would use all of this that I saw and I would want to incorporate it in my classroom. The kids are all engaged and I'm not sure if I should do a few now or just wait till the board meeting. But I'm just amazed with what the teachers come up with and the things that they do. And it's just like if you were in a regular classroom. It's hard to imagine that they work so hard to do this. And I wanted to say the presentation was outstanding. Okay, I'll just do a few. And then, so I have them in alphabetical order. For instance, at Alvarado, Mr. Yamamoto.
You want to save those for your board comments at the end?
I don't, Dr. Mitchell, what should I do?
I mean, it is completely up to you. You can save them to November and do them for your board comments, or you can say if there's some that are related to our presentation today to provide feedback of what our staff has presented. It's up to you, Donna.
President Malcolm, you'd rather me wait?
I think it'd be better if you just did them in November, because we'll give you as much time as you need.
Okay. All right. Anyways, whatever I see, I'm telling you, I think that it's amazing what these teachers are doing. And I really know the kids are learning and they're very engaged.
Thank you for understanding. The other thing is I remember hearing or reading someplace that Mount SAC is also providing some tutors for our students. Mm-hmm. Do we give out certificates of recognition to those students that are helping out by tutoring?
We have tutors that are AVID tutors, and some of them are students at Mount SAC. That is an employed position with us at the district.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, we'll move on to the next topic. Oh, one second. Ms. Ebbingham?
Did you want to do a closing comment? Or did we conclude our presentation?
I just wanted to say how good the report was. It's difficult to squeeze all that information into such a concise report, but the team did a really good job. Thank you.
Yes, I do have a closing comment, if you don't mind. As you can see, we have different ways of assessing student achievement and concrete ways of mitigating learning loss under our current circumstances. We want to thank our teachers, our classified staff, our support staff, and our administrators for their dedication to students and all their hard work. We also want to thank our parents for their partnership with us and acknowledge our wonderful students for their resiliency and grit during this time of virtual learning. I also want to thank the educational services team for their hard work and all the hours they put into making sure that we are here to support our students and our teachers and our schools. And I also want to recognize administrative services, Alex Flores and Dennis Bixler from Human Resources for supporting all our endeavors. It is really a team effort and it's all hands on deck. So we just present it, but we don't take all the credit for it. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move on to the next item now, which will have a staff report providing an update on the 2020-2021 school year. I will then turn it over to Dr. Mitchell this time.
Perfect, thank you very much. So we have four different items that we wanted to share just briefly with the board that I wanted to make sure that the board and those that are tuning in to our board meeting this evening know that any work that we're doing, we are in strict compliance with the guidelines of the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health. So we talk regularly with representatives from the Department of Public Health, and they also provide written guidelines and protocols that we must follow at any time that we are engaging with students. So tonight at our presentation, we have Mitch Brenner and Andrea Brumbaugh, our high school principals, who are going to be sharing a little bit about return to athletics. We have Dr. Mike Tincup, who is going to be sharing about one-to-one assessments for students with special needs. We also have Rocky Better, who will be talking about the opportunity for students and our children, youth in our community to engage in outdoor recreation activities, as well as opportunities for our students in the senior seminar program to participate in in-person internships. So at this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Dr. Tincup. I believe you're going to start by sharing about special education. And are you there?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Mitchell.
Thanks.
So next slide. So special education teachers and staff are diligently providing services to students throughout the district. We have a dedicated team of professionals who have students' best interests at heart every single day. We're providing services for students from preschool age to the young adult age of 22. Like most districts, there are many assessments and IEPs that are overdue as a result of COVID-19, and we are working together to meet these requirements. The California Department of Education, CDE, originally signed in law that timelines were waived for IEPs as a result of COVID-19. However, CDE's original stance was overturned recently, and now districts are being held accountable for overdue IEPs beyond July 1, 2020. In addition, the CDE has said that school districts need to complete at least 20% of those overdue IEPs per month to stay in compliance with the CDE. Next slide, please. Prior to holding IEPs, assessments must be completed to identify a student's current needs. Once the assessment is complete, the IEP can be developed and the IEP meeting can be held. This process has been a bit of a challenge as a result of COVID-19. RUSD IEP teams are making a great effort. I'm so proud of our staff and professionals to complete the overdue IEPs remotely. But many assessments, primarily for IEPs called initials and triennial assessments, cannot be fully completed remotely, particularly at the preschool level to make eligibility determinations. As a result, IEP teams are completing IEPs that they can complete remotely, but some in-person assessment is still needed to complete all of the IEPs. The district's working on plans to fully complete all of these overdue assessments and IEPs as soon as possible. And again, I can't thank our special education teachers and professionals enough for the amount of hard work that they've been putting in to try and catch up on these overdue assessments and IEPs.
Perfect, thank you, Dr. Tincup. At this point, we're going to transition to Mr. Brunier and Mrs. Brumbaugh, who are going to share about return to high school athletics.
Thank you, Dr. Mitchell and members of the board. Thank you for taking time to hear our proposal to return athletes to campus to begin conditioning. I believe it's important to start with why. Athletics supports students' physical, mental, and social well-being, and it's an important part of our mission. Some students have been physically inactive for months and need to prepare for competition that is scheduled to start for some in late December. Now, Mr. Brunier will continue with the next slide.
Thank you, and thanks for having us. This slide is dealing with how we will return to athletic physical activity and training. And so it really started with a collaborative effort, which involved our athletic directors, administration, and our trainers to use the guidance from health agencies and also from federal and state athletic organizations to create our RUSD return to physical activity and training protocols. So to provide for a safe environment for athletes and coaches, we have to clearly establish and communicate these protocols. And so just to give you a gist of what's in there, site plans are going to have to be developed. And these site plans will be done collaboratively. The site plan will be based off of the RUSD guidance. And in that, each site has unique needs. We have different facilities. We have different participation rates, staffing. So all of these things, these variances have to come into a site plan. Staff training is a big portion of this, and so this would start with head coaches as the leaders of their programs coming in and starting to receive the guidance and the expectations that are held that they will be held to. There will be limitations on gatherings, so you'll hear about cohorts, or sometimes they're referred to as pods, but you're looking at 12 athletes to one coach. So that's the structure that we have, and that allows for that isolation so that we do not have, you know, if we have an infection, we can control that spread and be able to identify and stop it with tracing. We will have restricted use of facilities. So at this point, everything is outside. There will be nothing done on the inside. And this is also going to be controlled in the use of that outside area to make sure that social distancing can be put in place. With safety measures, we will have pre-screening process in place with questions about symptoms, temperature checks with these nice little thermometers. We will have no sharing of equipment. We will have students or athletes coming dressed and ready with their water bottles. We will have mandated face coverings and social distancing. We will limit access to the site so there will be no spectators or friends or siblings coming in. We will have hygiene requirements that are a part of this, such as hand washing. And then also the cleanliness of the facility and how we're going to go about providing for that. And then also there's containment process that's a part of this when it comes to isolation and quarantine, if God forbid we have any infection. This is a phased in approach. So we are looking at a more restrictive setting as of right now and moving to a more open setting later, depending on health requirements and all of that. So we need to also build athletes up. And so that phased in approach will allow for that, because you cannot have them come in and have complete physical exertion right off the bat. When it comes to participation, is completely voluntary on all levels. So this is an opportunity that is structured in a safe environment. So in this case, if an athlete or a coach or family decides that they do not want to participate, there will be they will have that opportunity. They will not need to participate in this first phase when it comes to the conditioning piece. We can go to the next slide. So what needs to happen prior to opening? So there is quite a few things. So first off is staff training. And again, this is all what happens prior to opening. With staff training, this will be done at the site and will include detailed meetings with coaches to go through the protocols and expectations. With the parent and student informational meetings, these are in kind of two parts. You're looking at school-wide meetings, and then you will have specific to sport to look at the various nuances of that sport as their activities vary. So that's the next one. And then pre-participation physical and athletic clearance. This is basically athletes clearing to be able to participate. And so that process will all be done prior to coming. And it will also be a commitment to being there on a voluntary basis. When it comes to scheduling of cohorts, each coach will create their plan for their sport, which will then combine into the site plan so that you can have proper scheduling. You know exactly who's in which cohort, which stays consistent the entire time. And so that allows for you to have good control over this. So this allows for overall facility use of calendar by sport, by location, and by the cohort. So you know exactly who's on campus, when they were on campus, and who they were around. So at this point, I would like to introduce Rocky Better to speak about recreation and internships.
Perfect. Actually, before we transition to Rocky, I also would like to thank, as we plan for the return to our athletes back for conditioning and doing so in such a safe way, Dr. Laura Rivas, Alex Flores have both, from a district office perspective, been key in this work, as well as our athletic directors, Mike Ortali at Roland High School and Bruce Alley at Nogales High School. And I know both of them are tuned in for this board meeting as well. So, and I know that Mitch also mentioned our trainers. So it's been a team effort in developing this, and all of our coaches will also take a very active role. So with that then, Mr. Better, would you like to talk about return or inviting our youth to participate in recreation activities outdoors?
I would love to. Good evening, board. Thank you for this opportunity to speak about our district recreation program and offering our youth opportunity to be able to get outside from the keyboard and in their virtual learning in the afternoon to be able to participate in some outdoor recreation activities. The recommendation that we're looking at is to offer outdoor recreation activities in soccer, basketball, and tennis. The protocols that will be provided you have in your packet would be following the Department of Public Health protocols for playground and recreation activities. Our enrollments would be reduced. There would be temperature checking, wearing of masks, and no sharing of equipment, which means for soccer, basketball, and tennis, the child will have to bring their own soccer ball, basketball, and tennis balls to the sport that they've signed up for. We're looking at using the playground at Killian, which would be the asphalt basketball courts, as well as the field for soccer, and at Roland High School for the private tennis lessons. Next slide, please. The students that we're looking at, the numbers would be 8 students per class for soccer, 6 for basketball, and it would be private tennis lessons. So it would be one-on-one instruction with the tennis. We also provided the icon that came off the LA County Department of Health talking about youth sports and the reopening protocols. Again, this would be just opportunity for students to be able to get outside and have some type of physical activity. Parents would obviously be coming with their children, but they would be distanced away, would be required to wear masks as well. And our recreation staff through Colleen Bridgewater, who's our coordinator, has been working with the coaches for these programs to make sure all protocol and standards are followed, similar to what we had with the aquatics program this summer. And so that would be our recreation program. The next section that I have is the internship. And so we can pop 2 slides. And we're looking at offering our internships on site for our senior seminar students. We have 3 sessions identified, as you can see there. And in your packet was provided multiple information as well as documents that were used to determine the survey we did showing what students wanted, whether it be virtual or in person, and the areas where they would be held. And so we are moving forward in that direction. Our internship community committee is working with the internship sites to secure internships and also to find out the protocols those sites would require of our students. And I think we're headed in the right direction. Next slide. Thank you. We have contacted parents. They have agreed and signed a document for an internship agreement. We are working with our senior seminar students now, and they are filling out a Google form online with their senior seminar teachers that Vicki Birch, our School to Career Specialist, is collecting to make sure we know where students, what sessions they want to attend, and also their desire to attend. We are following the safety recommendations for the county with distancing, temperature checking, and all the criteria. The students will be interviewed virtually through Zoom with the internship coordinating committee to determine their best site placement. And the COVID agreement, student placement requirements. And at the end, the student interview will take place, and the internship supervisor at the site will also agree to the standards that we're identifying. This provides our internship students, our senior seminar students, the opportunity to conduct internships. Virtual internships are being worked out with Mount SAC in the arts and communication area, and that will be virtual as Mount SAC is off for the whole year. But we're working with their performing arts department to do some type of virtual internship. And so that's kind of in a nutshell where we are. Next slide.
That was it. Thank you, Mr. Better.
You're welcome.
So to our board, as you can hear, we are working collaboratively and collectively with small steps and diligent planning as we begin to work with our students in person, from one-to-one assessments, high school athletics, community recreation, and senior internships. And we are happy to take any questions that the board may have. You're muted, Mr. Malkin. I'm not sure if you're trying to.
I'm looking for hands.
Ms. Angelina Pride has her hand up.
Oh, yeah. I see. Yeah. Ms. Pride.
Thank you for all the information. I'm actually very excited that we're going to be starting some of our athletics and recreational programs back. My only question is, will we be requiring any additional staff or hours for those programs? I want to make sure that we have the staff that we need in order to be cautious and meet all of the requirements, but I do definitely feel like it's important to have these programs back on campus and for our community.
So from a staffing perspective, looking at all of the different programs that were shared tonight, your specific question was regarding athletics. And because our student athletes are in very small groups, there is not a need for additional staff. However, because of cohorting, there may be a need, as Mitch Brenner, and maybe Mitch, you would want to talk to it, when we talk about 12 athletes to one coach being in one pod or one cohort, if you have a team or you have a significant number of athletes, there may be a need for another coach or another adult to be there to help with conditioning. Mr. Brenner or Ms. Brenbrod, do you want to address that?
Sure. This really depends on a number of things. So first off, it comes down to the number of kids that are going to participate. So that's going to be one of the numbers that's going to be very important to find out how many cohorts you would actually make. And then from there, it comes down to your staff that you have. So that, again, is voluntary. So we have to check in and see which staff would be available. So that process right now, I'm working with the head coaches on to start, an athletic director, to start to assess the need. And at that point, a couple of ideas, looking at the possibility of volunteers, but that would kind of depend on a few things as far as clearances and such. And then another thing is to maybe even tap into a resource that, you know, like past coaches, staff that have done that in the past, like we've had some on-campus people that could do the conditioning components for this period, and it could be a resource for us. So we're in the beginning of it. It really comes down to who's going to participate before we'll have an answer to that.
Okay. I just know that in our district, the athletic directors still have to teach as well. So they're not available for all the time. And then the coaches aren't available all the time. So I just want to make sure that we have the staff to maintain precautions, because I really want this to work out. I want this to be a good experience for the kids. It's important to get them back in that, into some kind of familiar routine.
Yes, and this will happen after school hours. So that will not impact as far as availability of staff that teach. So it will happen after school hours.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Chen?
Yeah, on the community recreation youth sports section, you mentioned you have symptom check, which is check temperature. Do you check temperature in the high school, when the athletic activities?
Yes. Right now, we check the temperature of every employee who's reporting to work at a district facility, and we will be doing the same for all of the programs that we shared with the board this evening.
The students, do you check the students' temperature?
Yes, we will.
Okay, thank you.
Do we log those temperatures when we take them, or?
No, we do not.
Any other questions? Okay, I want to thank everybody for that presentation. And Rocky, you're looking great.
Thank you.
Is there a closing remark that any of the people want to make on that presentation?
Nope, I made it. It was the one about small steps and coming back and bringing our students back. So we are meeting that expected timeline, Mr. Malkin. We are moving. You made a request and we delivered.
Okay. Let's see, are we going to do board comments or not?
No. Not on a study session.
Okay. Can I have a motion and a second to adjourn the study session of Rolling Unified District Board of Education?
I'll move.
Second.
Do I have a second? Ms. Pride seconds it?
I second
it. So we'll do a roll call. Did you second it, Ms. Friedman?
I motioned it.
Yeah, you motioned it. Ms. Pride seconded it. Okay, Ms. Friedman?
Aye.
Mr. Chen?
Aye.
Ms. Ebbenkamp?
Yes.
Ms. Pride?
Aye.
It's aye for me. The motion carries unanimously. The meeting's adjourned at 6:06. And I want to thank everybody who participated in the audience. And in November, when we have our board meeting, Ms. Friedman will have unlimited time for board comments. I'll go on record and say that.
Thank you, David.
Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the evening.
Bye. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night.